Greetings from Polymancer. Welcome to episode 12 of the Dicecast. We hope you enjoy it.
Episode 12, Interview with Monica Gaudio. So welcome back to Dicecast. In this special episode, we have an interview with Monica Gaudio, and everybody who's been on the web recently has probably heard her name and the name Cooksource Magazine. It was a big issue coming up, and we've had the chance to interview Monica regarding this. And as well, we tried to get in touch with Cooksource to get their side of the story. Unfortunately, we weren't able to secure any comments from them. Isn't that right?
That's correct. Every means that was available to contact Cooksource was attempted, and we just came up with a dead end, whether it was email, a couple of their email addresses have been taken offline, so have their phone numbers similarly have been disconnected. We wanted to get their side of the story here, and it was just not possible. But we were able to get in touch with Monica Gaudio, and rather than going with all the commentary that's been going all online, a lot of it very humorous, we went directly to the source.
So a lot of people have probably heard about what happened, and we thought it'd be of interest to our writers, because obviously we do come up with a lot of publications. A lot of people that we work with also have a lot of their material online, whether it's a blog or their own articles, or have written for zines online. And this is something that a lot of people who write actually paid a lot of attention to, and we thought it'd be interesting to actually cover this in our podcast. So without further ado, here comes Monica Gaudio on Dicecast.
Right after this.
Looking for more great gaming podcasts? Check out RPGpodcast.com.
Well, Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, first off, for the sake of our listeners who have not heard about this incident, please tell us in your own words what happened.
Well, basically, I got an email from a friend of mine. His name's Jeff Berry. He's also a medieval foodie like me. And he said, "Hey, Monica, how did you get published?" In an email, more or less. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he let me know that my article called A Tale of Two, well, it's A Tale of Two Tarts, had been published in this magazine called Cooksource, which is like a free daily newspaper-y kind of magazine, the kind of free ones you get at grocery stores.
It's
based on advertising. And what happened was I was kind of flabbergasted. I had not given anyone permission to use this article. This article was published on the web on goodcookery.com, which is a website that I basically kind of co-own with my friend Jim Mateer.
Okay.
And we're big, good cookery. It's a big medieval food website. And so I contacted her, and there were a couple of email exchanges. I was really first thought it was maybe an accident, and like, how did this happen? And then I got a couple emails back from her, back and forth. And finally, the last email that I got, and the first email that I got was like, "Well, didn't you want to be published?" It was on the internet, and I was like, it's still copyrighted. It's still my work. This is copyright infringement."
Yeah.
And I let her know that what I wanted her to do to make up for it was to write an apology in print and on her Facebook page, which is where one of the places that she also publishes.
Yes.
And give $130 to the Columbia School of Journalism,
which would amount to about 10 cents a word.
Exactly. Instead, what I got was a scathing email back.
That was quite something, that email.
Yeah, I don't have the email in front of me, but it basically said that I should pay her for editing my work for me.
I'm not laughing at you here.
Yeah, I know. Oh, and she also said, but honestly, the internet is public domain, which, so at that point, I had been talking with my friend, Nick Mamatot, who's a horror writer, great guy. And so when I posted, I sent the letters back and forth to him. What do I do about this? And then I blogged about it. And I posted my little quote up there, and then he linked to me. Well, John Scalazzi, I hope I didn't murder that name, reads Nick's journal. And John is the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America.
Yeah, he's quite well known.
Yes. And then Neil Gaiman retweeted what John had written, and then Will Wheaton and Warren Ellis. And then it kind of basically went everywhere. So everyone and their brother seemed to suddenly know about me and Cook Source, and it basically, then it hit the internet, and it hit the newspapers, and yeah, it just kind of went everywhere at the moment. And then the internet basically kind of descended upon Cook Source. They had a Facebook page that was up, and they kind of did two things. First, they basically kind of hijacked it and made all sorts of commentary on it that were, some of it was hilarious.
That's a mild understatement.
Well, some of them were completely hilarious. Like, I think one of my favorites was, Cook Source stole my baby. Like, from Bingo, stole my baby. See, what was my other favorite one was, oh, but honestly, Monica, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. I laugh. So, and then what they also did is they also researched, they went through back issues. And I'm going to say these words, like, allegedly and apparently, there had been some other copyright infringement that had happened. There is a Google Doc website that has about 160 incidences that they have listed. So I don't know whether or not those are true. It's not my work. So if Paula Deen and Food Network and Martha Stewart and Disney want to talk to Ms. Griggs about this, they can. But that's not what I'm, that's not for me to do. So.
And now, recently, CookSource posted what is essentially a mea culpa to their website. What are your thoughts on that?
What are my thoughts? I think that's the best I'm going to get for an apology. But another thing to mention is I just found out from the Columbia School of Journalism that she did indeed donate the $130 I heard from them that she had donated, not the amount of money, as Columbia School of Journalism has some donor privacy information. But I do know that she donated in my name.
Okay, well, that's fair then. So they made good on that. She also promised to donate a similar amount to a local food bank, I think.
Yes, I haven't heard back from the food bank yet, but that's fine. I honestly think it's the best I'm going to get. I don't understand why it happened to begin with. I really don't understand why at all. The internet is not public domain. Everything you write, at least since from 1989 on, and trust me, because I've spent a lot more time lately reading about copyright and talking to attorneys on this. Everything basically since 1989, the minute that you create it, it's copyrighted. It's been a crazy ride, and I think it's about over, and I'm hoping it's over, because I did not really intend to become internet famous about this, and I did not expect to have a Wikipedia article with my name in it ever. It's been a little crazy.
Okay, why did you choose the Columbia School of Journalism?
I Googled journalism school donation, and guess what came up? It was the first reputable school that I found, and I went, hey, Columbia School of Journalism, all right. And so I saw that they had an online donation form, and I wanted to make it easy for Cook Source to be able to donate.
Oh, okay.
Like, do it online.
Why did you choose to post some of Judith Griggs' email to your blog?
It's mostly a matter of principle and outrage, I guess. I could not believe what she had said to me, and I wanted to get some feedback from some friends of mine on what I should do. I also, I'm a part of a medieval organization, and we're recommitting a recreation group. And I had actually written that article for them, and it's been published in, like, little newsletters, like, you know, that we pass amongst ourselves and whatnot. And I had written it for a competition. And I actually won the competition. I was very excited about this. It was back in 2004. And I wanted to let them know that this had happened to me and that they should look to see whether or not some of the, and to just double check the internet or wherever to let them know that this sort of thing had happened. That's what I published. One, two, because I was angry, as I say plainly on my journal, I'm mad as hell. And the second was to let other amateur medieval enthusiasts, that I've been calling myself, know that this happened to me and that it might happen to them.
Okay.
And it was not cool.
All right. That's fair. And then you didn't post her email address or her entire email. So it was you were conscientious about it for sure.
Well, yes. And also in part because I understand the concept of fair use and I'm allowed to quote from fair use from emails. And there was some question. I could not find a definitive answer on the web or from friends of mine of whether or not an email sent to you is copyrighted. So, however, I know from fair use, I can quote a little bit. That's what I did. I quoted a little bit.
You said before it was like a mild understatement that it kind of went around the internet. A lot of people came out in full force online on Facebook, on Twitter, and on their blogs. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I always think that one of the things I said was be mighty, but follow the golden rule. I don't think anyone should have done anything angry or mean or destructive towards CookSource. That's inappropriate. But coming out and this is not okay, that this is wrong, that we didn't like this, I thought that was fair. I think it's completely fair for people to express their feelings in a positive and good fashion, but flat out doing harm is not okay, like to threaten or anything like that. And I did hear that they had, through Second Street Bakery, which is one of the advertisers that had pulled out, that there was some backlash against some of the advertisers.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of the advertisers were contacted.
I feel very bad about that. That was not my intention at all. I did not want the advertisers to be threatened in any way. So I felt bad about that part, that they got harassed.
That is fair, for sure. Like, did you expect it to go as far as it did?
No! No! I expected, like, I was hoping. I didn't expect anything. I hoped maybe one or two people might, like, make a comment on her Facebook page that this was not cool or not okay. And that was it. That was basically, and just something to, and I was hoping to get perhaps a legal advice, because I was thinking I could sue her in small claims court over this. Guess what? You cannot sue people in small claims court. I've discovered this now that I've had many attorneys come and talk to me. And I've had a great attorney right now. I found him was through this kerfuffle online. And that's how we met, was because of what happened. But no, I didn't expect this at all. I expected maybe a bit of tiny legal advice as to how to do something. And maybe 5-10 people going, this is not cool, some miscreants on and CookSource.
The key to it all, I think, is like when it went to the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America and also to Neil Gaiman. I mean, not only do they have legions of fans, but writers, speculative fiction writers especially, are very, very cognizant of their rights under copyright law, and they like to spread the word about that.
Exactly. I just, honestly, I had not expected it to go like it did. I really did. When Neil wrote about it or tweeted about it, I was standing in my mom. I was with my mom, and we're looking at the computer, watching this happen. And I went, oh my God. I went, oh my God. Oh my God. I just kept saying, oh my God, a lot. And my mom is not as internet savvy as most people, I guess, you know, these days. So she didn't quite get what Twitter was and what this was until I went, mom. He has 1.5 million people that read his stuff. And then she went, oh. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a very crazy day. That was a very, very crazy day.
Now, did you expect the mainstream media to pick it up? Like, I've seen stories about this in the Washington Post, The Guardian, and on MSNBC.
Honestly, once I saw that Neil had picked it up, my twin sister started texting me with the number of people that had retweeted my link. And then once that happened, I was like, this is going to go pretty big. So once it hit like a peak, I guess I knew that some of the mainstream media would be calling.
You said there was a number of people who retweeted it. Just off the top of your head, where does that number stand now?
Oh, the last I checked was like 5,000, but that was like a week ago, so I have no idea. I don't know how the responding Twitter feeds and like how they do the trending or anything like that. I have no idea. I know I have a Wikipedia page. And I also know that I don't want to become obsessed with being internet famous. I want to put this down now and go on with my life and continue doing cooking and doing other things and not be an internet famous person. I don't want to be that. I don't want that to be my life. I do not want to be internet famous as my life. So.
Well, certainly, if nothing else, there are going to be a lot of people making your pies from here on.
I'm so excited about that. That makes me so happy. I can't tell you. I had a lot of people like tell me that they were going to make them for the holidays, and I'm like, great. So I'm just real excited about that. The 14th century pie is the one without the sugar. It's called a coffin. It's a medieval way of cooking food without having to have a dish, really.
It's because the crust isn't meant to be eaten.
Right, exactly. So you know what? Some people ate it. And they thought it was great. I'm like, okay. But it says you're not supposed to. Yeah, whatever. But they ate it and they thought it was fine. But if you want to make that pie filling and just use regular crust for it, you can, and it's quite tasty.
I know you do want to keep your privacy here, but I do have to ask, like, does your professional background include writing?
Not really. I do not. I'm not published by like a journalism or anything like that. And so no, I'm not a journalist. I'm nothing like that.
And now, if people could learn anything from what happened here, what would you like it to be?
There's so many lessons learned here. How about this one? If I had gotten a nice email back saying, I'm very sorry this happened. Let me fix it. This wouldn't have happened. Instead, I got an email that the way I took the tone was really negative, and I thought it was inappropriate. Frankly, if she had lied to me and said, oh, it was my secretary, she's supposed to have taken care of this and didn't, I would have said, all righty, no big deal. Or if she'd even called me beforehand. I'm not 100% sure I would have let her publish it. As I'm a part of a nonprofit educational organization, that's what the medieval group is, and I don't want to make a profit off this. Not for profit, it was for education.
Which is one of the reasons why you had the restitution be paying 10 cents a word to a journalism school.
Right. And rather than myself, I did not want to make a profit off of it. I still don't want to make a profit off of it. I want to educate people that medieval cooking is fun and cool, and it is not the Victorian way of they just put lots of spices on it to cover up the fact that it was rotting. That's a lie, by the way. That's not true. I would just say, with the thing that I be excellent to each other, let's, you know, take one from Bill and Ted, be mighty, one from Escape Pod, and the golden rule, just do unto others, because this would not have happened if we all obeyed the golden rule and did what we were supposed to do on this one. My intellectual property was basically stolen. If someone hadn't stolen it, I would not have reacted the way that I did. So be nice to people. That's my big one. Be nice to people. That would be the biggest, number one takeaway I would say for everything is just be nice to people and we'll go from there.
That is a very good lesson to learn from all this. Do you have any final thoughts?
Thank you. for everyone who was out there and who supported me, who said nice things to me, who gave me great advice, to my lawyer, to my family, to my friends, to everyone who supported me, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I truly, truly thank you all. This has been an incredibly strange, weird, flabbergasting experience, and I'm just so grateful for all the people that helped me, from the smallest people for just retweeting things to the people that held my hand. So thank you so much to everyone.
Well, on behalf of Dicecast and our listeners, we would like to thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview with us.
No, thank you for interviewing me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Dicecast. In the coming month, look for changes and something new on our websites. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this segment. You can find out more about who we are and what we do at our website, www.polymancer.com, as well as our main corporate website, www.polymancerstudios.com. You can also keep in touch with us by emailing us directly at dicecast@polymancerstudios.com, follow us on Twitter at Polymancer, on Facebook at facebook.com/polymancer, and myspace.com/polymancer. The music for this segment, Fort Minor, Remember the Name BYFH Remix by Chojine, Violated Instrumental by Technetium, Industrial March Beat, and Triple Layer Guitar in E by Neurowax are all released under a Creative Commons license. This episode is copyright 2010 Polymancer Studios Incorporated, released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works license, the full text of which is available at creativecommons.org. This episode may be copied or redistributed so long as it is done free of charge in unmodified form and due credit is given to the copyright owner. Dicecast is a trademark of Polymancer Studios Incorporated. The word Polymancer is a registered trademark of Polymancer Studios Incorporated. Thank you for listening to the Dicecast.